wouldn't refer somebody to a house, but we would refer them to someone who would find the house they need. We tried to find those people. Mm-hmm. We couldn't have handled the housing as such like that.
Now, from the very beginning, once they approached you and you started to function in this way, was it defined as only for women? Or initially, was it supposed to be both for both men and women, and it evolved into being primarily for women?
Well, it would have been for anyone who asked me anything. Mm-hmm. I would have tried to find it. But it was primarily women who asked.
Mm-hmm. How do you think it became defined that way? Primarily because it was the women who had the needs? Or
yes, the women were responsible for the families. And the men were leaving.
And most of the problems were basically family-related problems.
Yes, I would say so.
Mm-hmm. What was there ever a point at which the issue of shopping services in the plant came up? Was that explored at any point? I know in some, I think it was down in San Diego Consolidated, where they had the stores actually come in and take the orders during the daytime and collect the ration books, and then the women would be able to go pick up their groceries.
No, we didn't do that. We had we had one woman, what was her name? She was a national president of the PTA, and she applied for work out there. And this was quite a bit later, though. But to answer your question, I recall that she came in and was going, and she was hired, and I was to report to her. And she was to report to the industrial relations man. I was at that point reporting to the personnel manager, which was under him. And she came in, and we had a counselor's meeting, and she and the works manager was there. And she stood up and said that she was going to insist that the company give every woman a day off to shop with pay. And he got up and left the room and was going to pull the whole program. He wasn't going to have anything else to do with it. And so I asked him if I could, if he'd give me a little bit of time. And he said I could come work for him. But if it was still going to be under industrial relations, he wasn't going to have anything more to do with it. Because they couldn't. We worked 7 days a week. There just wasn't any way you could do that. So, but that was the only thing I recall of going, of doing that. Mm-hmm. And that, again, was not bringing it in. I imagine that was not successful. They may have tried it, but
do you recall anything like baking services being brought in or where the women could pay their bills?
No.
I know Douglas had that, apparently.
No.
Now, I know it's difficult to reconstruct. I wonder if you could try to reconstruct the way in which the program developed and grew and in which new counselors were added and as you began to expand your functions to the other feeder plants as well.
Well, as soon as women were put into the plants, then we were sent there, but I was sent there. And then I know that I had to work all three shifts occasionally. I would, I would appear on the midnight shift and on the swing shift. We found an awful lot of women whose husbands were gone to like that swing shift because the hours when they would most miss their husband were occupied, and that was very interesting to me. And we recommended it finally to girls who were, pretty unstrung because it did work.
Do you have any sense of the percentage of women who were working whose husbands were in the service and away?
Well, I just feel that it would have been good 75%.
Because, when I...
maybe that's high.
I was so surprised in gathering data when I taught my class last spring. My assumption was that a very high percentage of the women who were working in defense industries were probably the wives of servicemen who were overseas. Mm-hmm. in the total figure of women, now this was all women in the labor force, during the height of the war years, only 10% of them were servicemen's wives. But it's very possible that they were really heavily concentrated in places like L.A., which had all of the naval stations as well as the army stations, and had such a high concentration of aircraft, which would have increased that. But I was very surprised. I thought it would have been much, much higher totally.
Oh, I would too. I doubt that figure. I really doubt that figure, because 75 probably is too high, because I'm 75 would be of all the women, and a lot of the women who had been in the office functions were not necessarily even married, but an awful lot of the women who went into the factory were. They were the unskilled, and they're the ones that I'm thinking about.
Do you have a sense that the women who were more likely to come to you or the other counselors with problems were those who were primarily the housewives rather than those who had been working previously, who in a sense had already figured out how to handle some of these problems?
Yes, I think so. That's why I felt the program was so necessary, because really what it was helping women cope with working when they hadn't done it before and under very unusual circumstances. And then, you know, we had all kinds of weird things, like one time I had to go in the red. Oh, I learned things I didn't even know happened in the world. I had to go into a restroom. The FBI had word of a certain woman who was recruiting for the camps, for the girls to go up and sleep with the men. And I had to catch her at it. And I did. And I had to I had to catch a couple of lesbians that were at work, and things I didn't even know about, really. And then another time I remember that the FBI came in and they wanted me to talk to this girl who had married, I think, 10 men and was collecting their allotment checks. She'd marry them just before they'd ship out, and she'd get their allotment checks.
I remember going through newspapers of the period, coming across reports. I forgot what they were, allotment annies? They started referring to them as something. So very often you ended up, because you had access, for instance, to the women's bathrooms, almost doing some police functions, it sounds like.
There, you name it. And I did it, because they didn't know who else to have do it. And I said, well, sure, I'll try. And I'd go and do it. This girl that was collecting the allotment checks, I recall interviewing her, and I was so confused by the time I finished that I wrote up my report. And at the end of it, I said, one of us is crazy. There was just one contradiction after another. And I was really writing it the way she had said it. And then I just wrote my own comment at the bottom. And and he said, well, she's a pathological liar. And we knew that, but we had to. And they couldn't talk to a woman. That was another thing. They weren't allowed to talk to a woman without another woman present, for fear she would claim she was intimidated in some way. So that was another reason that I was there.
When they would be called in?
Yes.
On any sort of complaint?
Yeah.
So you would sit in on all of these?
Some of them.
So it sounds, was there any other woman in personnel who had functions like that, or were you basically doing personnel functions?
Probably. No, there was no one else to do it. The personnel was set up. They had the interviewers, and then they had the people who processed transfers. But they did more of a clerical kind of function of the records. They didn't do as much. I have always since that time been in personnel work and have done a great deal of it. And I don't like it if it's only the record keeping, because mm-hmm. I feel that if people are content and happy and whatever is bugging them, if that can be ironed out, it's just much easier. So I'm very, very strong on that. I know there are many versions of personnel work, and a lot of it is the figures, and mm-hmm. I think that's an important part of it, but it isn't the part that appealed to me mm-hmm. as much. But and then they had, in their personnel function, they had the plant offices where they handled the phone. You can imagine with 115,000, if that's the figure, or 100, whatever the figure, that's an awful lot of people to handle and process and get, you know, records of attendance and all the rest of it. So they needed the people right in the mm-hmm. plants. And sometimes those people would refer people to us. You know, someone would come
from
in
from
the plant personnel offices. And then the supervisors, and then the people would come themselves. I remember one woman who was an engineer. She was one of the first women engineers. And the man, this was another tough supervisor, and he called and asked me if I would talk to her, that she swore so much that the men complained. And so I asked her to come in. Well, that was uncomfortable. She was so smart. She could work rings around the men. And I just asked her why. And she said, well, that's the only way I can get their attention. She said, if I say we ought to do it this way, they don't hear me. And if I say, God damn it, we ought to do it this way, then she said they pay attention. And she had a point. And I said, well, you know, you gotta have to find a better way. So, it was very odd to have that complaint.
Uh-huh. But yeah. Even, I mean, basically, then you were viewed as someone who would handle any problem relating to any woman in any division.
I think
of
at
company.
One point my title was in charge of problems affecting women.
Because uh-huh. Somewhere I came across a reference to something called a women's clinic. That would not have been related. What was the relationship in the very beginning, as this was being formulated, between yourself and the nurses? There was a nurse.
We had a very good, Louise Davidson. We had a very good relationship, and they were too busy, really, to take on this function and didn't want it. They really didn't want it. It wasn't anything that they objected to it all, and they were very helpful. Mm-hmm. But they, you see, there were all kind, you know, all through the factory, there were these first aid units, and they were responsible for those.
Mm-hmm.
And that was actually doing medical work. That was, you know, fixing arms and fingers mm-hmm. and everything else that would. So they were very busy, and you could go in there if you had a cold, and you know, the whole works.
Because in the very early period, let's see when that was, there was reference to her as being,
yeah, you said that,
the counselor, uh-huh. And this was in September of 41. There was a story, and unfortunately, they didn't Xerox that page for me to show you, which was Lockheed, Miss Louise Davidson, supervisor of nurses, heads counseling staff, working with Jack Fowl, general counselor, and at Vega, Golda Andrews, head visiting nurse, assisted by Miriam Kane of Vega Employee Relations. What I wondered was if...
Have you contacted Miriam Kane?
No. Is she still around?
I don't know.
I have... anyone who worked until retirement, they can trace down for me. And they're going to, there was a little item in the company paper the other day. I know we got a couple of calls from women who were still working there or who had come back
mm-hmm.
and worked there. So we are trying to trace down some of these people. Someone thought Louise Davidson was not alive anymore.
I don't know. I'd like to know, too, because I liked her. I dug out some old records when I knew you were coming. I don't think anything that you'd be interested in, particularly, but I just thought I'd pull out the things I had tried to say. And I came across a list You can see how old it is. This was a list of the address and telephone numbers of a number of the counselors that worked with me.
Oh.
And I have no, you know, I don't even know when I made that list. But I used to keep it like that in my phone book.
Hmm.
And see, this is the way, this was the way they were assigned to that department. That's why it's kind of hard for
I
me
see.
To tell you.
Oh, I see. I wonder if I can Xerox this. And this, would this be all of them? Or this?
No, this was
at
this one
is the point. That looks like it's the point at which I know it's a reference to 26ers.
Yeah.
Now, what I wondered was if it was possible that Louise Davidson had been, that what they did is before you changed your function and started doing that, if what they had done
they may
was
have.
Try to use her to do some counseling and then discovered that it couldn't work.
They may have.
Since that was in September or so of 41.
Yeah, it may have been.
Now, what did you do with your own children? You had someone staying in the...
I had someone stay be there after school until I got home. And then as we developed the child care centers, my children went to the child care centers.
Oh, now, were you living right in the Burbank area?
I was in Glendale, lived in Glendale.
Mm-hmm. And then as the... I want to ask you more about the... The child care centers too. The at what point did you begin to go to the other plants as well?
I don't remember. Just as soon as they had enough women, I would go there to see if they were. I would go there to see if they were set up, if the facilities were adequate.
Mm.
And I would talk to the supervisor, to the men, and see how much help they needed. And then as soon as they had enough women that they needed the help of a counselor, we would get somebody up there.
Oh, I see.
And sometimes we would work even with the matrons who would become... conscious of problems through the restrooms.
Oh.
And they would tell us, you know, something, some of them.
Hmm. Now, do you have a sense of there being clear differences in the composition of the workforces between,
the different
say,
plans.
Burbank
yes.
and,
yes.
and 7th and Santa Fe and Maywood?
Yes, there was no question about it that there were... a goodly percent of Negroes in the downtown area because that's where they, you know, that's what that population was. And that's the way each plant developed, I think, was what they could draw on because
right.
we needed everybody. The thing in the article that I read that I objected to was it sounded as though there were only Negroes in Spanish, and that is not correct.
No, that it was the way in which she punctuated the sentence, which ended up being very misleading because
And as far as advertising in those papers, we advertised in every paper.
Mm.
And I was there when they brought the first Negro in.
In Burbank?
In Burbank. Mm-hmm. And I think in any... I know I was there when the first Negro was hired at Lockheed. And we didn't know what to expect. And we got it. A lot of people objected.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, that person has had the same physical examination as you have.
Oh, so as part of your role as counselor, you were going to end up dealing with a lot of those problems,
yeah.
I imagine, didn't you?
And I said, she's had the same physical that you have, and he has a right to the same restroom. They were requesting that they be assigned to a different restroom. And I said, no, no way. Why should they be?
Well, there were a fair number of white Southern workers, weren't there, which would have exacerbated that problem.
Yeah.
Now, what happened when the Negro women came in? Did the women react
as much as the men had reacted to the first Negro man, do you recall?
Yes, same thing. And once you met it immediately without any problem, they pretty well accepted it. I said, you don't, you know, it's a question of whether you want to work here or not. That's the way it's going to be. And if you don't want to, you don't have to. But if you do want to, those are the conditions. And there isn't anything wrong with the conditions because the facilities are made adequate. And but it was kind of interesting. And we had one girl, Barbara Trippett, who was excellent at speaking. And she wanted to do, she wanted to talk to the Negroes and in one group and the whites in another group. And she worked with me. She was one of the counselors. And I had gone along with her and said I would go along with her if she wanted to do the talking. I did not enjoy doing the talking. I get so terrified that I get almost sick, so I just hated to do it. I did a lot of it, an awful lot of it. And so the works manager said that if she wanted to do the speaking and I sat there so she couldn't say the wrong thing, it would be all right. So I let her do that a lot. And but then when it came to speaking to them separately, I thought that was dynamite. So I went on record throughout the company saying, I am not for this. And if you let her speak, you're doing it on your responsibility. Mm-hmm. So that, then they didn't. Mm-hmm. They didn't let her do that. I do think that would have been dynamite. But
now, in other words, this would be going into the plant and speaking about what your services are. Is that it?
Yes, and talking about various problems and how they could be handled, things that would come up in the everyday work to show how they could use the counseling service. Because sometimes, and this would usually be like if the men would meet to see what they would do about certain schedules, then they would have a 10-minute, 15-minute talk by one of the counselors who would say what her function was and what some of the problems were that they were not aware of, just so they could be a little more conscious of what was happening.
Now, was that a regular part of, say, departmental meetings that the counselors would?
Yes.
Oh, because I was wondering the way in which the word of mouth was spread about the counseling system.
Yes.
So it was, each department would definitely know about it.
Oh, yes.
And then the women, was there any sort of newsletter or memos that were sent to the women in the departments to make them aware of the counseling services?
No. I think they met a counselor as they came in, so there was no question of that. This was at one point. That I wrote, the Mademoiselle magazine had asked us for something, and I, what I had done, and I was trying to write to her. And I was trying to say how we did it. I thought there was some place where I had said that a girl was taken to a counselor and she introduced her to her department.
Oh.
It was sort of handled that way so that there was no question about, I don't know whether this is worth anything or not.
Well, I wonder if perhaps I could Xerox some of those.
Well, you can glance through that and see it's probably lots of what I've just said. This, for instance, was a counselor's report that we had. We would like to try to, we tried to standardize what was happening.
So after each visit,
but that was a weekly thing, and you just sort of tried to keep track of how many. Those are the records I threw out.
Oh. Do you have any notion of how many women would be seen in a week, say, in 43, which was the peak year of employment by the counselor?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't. A lot. An awful lot.
I always want to cry when I see about records like this that have been thrown out.
Mm-hmm.
Reginald Jones, I discovered, who was the head of minority training, and I guess was at the Santa Fe and 7th plant. I had come across, several people had talked about him, and he had been interviewed about 9 years ago by someone who did a thesis at UCLA. When I talked to this person who did the thesis, they said, well, I understand he died about a year ago and he had a garage full of records. Well, I finally tracked down his son, who works at Lockheed, and it turns out he died 8 years ago, and that the house was sold something like 3 years ago, and there was a garage full of records, which had all been thrown out.
Well, you know, if you're not going to use them, you move them from one shelf to another.
Do you recall any sort of report by the counselor made when, on an entry sort of interview with women?
No, and we didn't really want them to make too many reports.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the individual, you had to keep a certain amount of them. And actually what we try to do is like, you keep a card that said Susan Laughlin, January Child Care. You wouldn't keep the details of it. You would just sort of do it like that. Because, and we told them that. They were very concerned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were abortions. There was just, you name it, and there was that kind of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't. They came to us because they thought we wouldn't discuss it.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried to keep that trust pretty sacred. And I had a woman call me, if you would believe it, I believe about 10 years ago. That's still 30 years after. And she said, are you the Susan Laughlin that used to work at Lockheed? And I said, yes. And she said, well, I found this name in the book, and I just wanted to thank you for what you had done for me. And then she told me about this big long tale, and I forget even what the problem was, but she was so grateful that there was somebody. You know, this kind of counseling is the kind that you go to a hairdresser and you pour out all your problems because you know they don't know anybody that you know, and it doesn't matter, or you go to... So we decided that everybody was a counselor. Some men pour out their problems to the cleaning woman if he's working late at night before he gets drunk. And it was just somebody to talk to that, and then if they needed any help, you could give it to them. And it was, I think it's something that everybody needs and always has and always has found somewhere. But this was, in an accelerated period, offering it right where it was needed.
It sounds as if there were almost three different